This is David Crippen, and this is Tuesday, October 29th, 1985. This is an interview for our Design History Center with Mr. Lawrence Kiyoshi Shinoda, S-H-I-N-O-D-A. Mr. Shinoda is a Native American of Japanese ancestry who has been responsible and is continuing to be responsible for an incredible wide variety of automotive designs. Mr. Shinoda will tell his story in his own words, beginning with his earliest recollections of his boyhood and his lifelong passion for automobiles.
Well, I guess, Dave, I started out being interested in automobiles at a very young age, and I also did drawings from when I was very young, and I believe when I was in the third grade, I did a very large mural on butcher paper. It was quite heavy, white butcher paper, and this painting was shown at the Los Angeles County Fair.
How'd that come about?
Well, it was to start out as a student project, and each student did a small painting, you know, depicting something or other. Mm-hmm. And then the promising ones, the teacher said, well, now why don't you do a large one? Mm-hmm. So usually they worked in teams. Well, in this case, I did work in a team. I had two or three other kids helping me, and I directed this large painting of the family nursery in San Lorenzo, California.
Where's that?
San Lorenzo, California, mm-hmm. near San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And it depicted greenhouses, trucks, cars, people, animals, hoses, and all sorts of things. Of course, roses that they grew, and mm-hmm. carnations, and cymbidiums, and also gardenias were mm-hmm. grown. So. And, you know, it was kind of and then years later...
How old were you then, excuse me?
I guess I was probably six.
Six?
Either five or six.
Incredible. How did you get down to the Los Angeles County Museum?
Well, they first showed it at the L.A. County Fair.
Oh, County
then,
Fair.
And then after the County Fair, the show was broken up, and it was probably put away somewhere. Mm-hmm. And years later, it showed up in the L.A. County Museum as young art from a third grade student and his, you know,
had you
and his team.
It?
Yes, I did. Yeah. In fact, I think there were three other children that also signed it, but mm-hmm. I was a director.
Were you able to retrieve it for your personal collection?
No, I never did. In fact, when I was on my honeymoon in 1958, we're going through the LA Museum, mm-hmm. and we're going through the children's art, and there it is.
It's still there.
It was, but it's not anymore.
Incredible. So, an interest in drawing, obviously
right.
motivated you from a very early age.
So, mm-hmm. and then I drew pictures, and I drew cars, and I was interested in cars.
Mm-hmm. And Southern California in those days, as now, was a hotbed of car culture, wasn't it? Pretty much.
Yes, pretty much so. The hot rod culture all started there. The first drag racing started there. There were numerous kinds of races going on. In fact, when I was a little bit older, my older cousins would go to this track called Ascot, which was a legendary racetrack.
Where was that?
It was just on the east side of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And it was a the time that I went, it was a 5/8 mile high bank dirt track. They had very fast cars, and in those days, to go to the races for admission, you'd have to bring a can of food, mm-hmm. any kind of food. So, well, we would go rob the pantries, and my cousin would say, "Well, there'd normally be Japanese canned goods, so we would peel the labels off and donate them." probably the unsuspecting people probably got a, you know, a real treat.
Yeah.
Or we'd try to sneak in.
Jimmy, can you pull up a little bit?
Sure.
And the that type of racing was very popular at that time, wasn't it?
Yes, there were also, there were these Indianapolis type car races, and then there were jalopy races, and then there were all kinds of races. And across the street from my grandfather's house, there was a group of people that worked on race cars. They would use an old pepper tree as a tackle block to hoist engines out.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's where the term pepper tree mechanics all began.
Is that right?
And there were some fairly famous drivers used to hang out at this corner. In fact, one of them was the Indianapolis 500 winner, Roger Ward. His family lived down the street. His father ran a garage over in the, well, several miles away in Highland Park. And then, of course, in later years, I worked on his pit crew at Indianapolis, and I also designed the car that he drove and won his two Indianapolis 500s in.
Roger Ward.
Right.
Yeah. Was there, which were those, by
the way? That was in 1959 and 1962.
And what were the cars and engines that you
The cars had? Were A.J. Watson designed cars, mm-hmm. built cars, and they ran Offenhauser engines.
Was your task to make them more aerodynamic?
No, my task was basically in the styling, and at that point in time, nobody really talked about aerodynamics.
But, mm-hmm. but it certainly was a factor in racing.
It was a factor, yes.
Yeah, right. Your parents were immigrants from Japan?
Yes, my father was born in 1900 and came to the U.S. in 1910.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was born in Japan and then brought to the U.S. And I believe she was 6 months old when they came to the U.S.
Yeah.
And of course, my father passed away in 1933 when I was 3 years old.
Oh, yeah. What's your mother?
My mother lived until 1971.
And you all settled in that part of Southern California?
Yes, well, the family, my father's family, had one of the largest wholesale flower nurseries. They were both growers and wholesalers.
Mm-hmm.
And the company still exists. It's called San Lorenzo Nursery Company.
Really?
They have they had large nurseries in San Lorenzo, California, and then they had nurseries in Torrance, California, and Santa Barbara.
This was a common practice for Japanese immigrants at that time, was it, to go in some kind of gardening or landscape architecture or nurseries?
Yes, nurseries, and then there were a lot of truck farmers that had small plots that grew vegetables,
mm-hmm.
also citrus and other type of fruits.
So the truck farm industry and the citrus industry and the nursery business and the landscape architecture business were largely populated by Japanese in those days.
Yes, it was. And then when the war came about and we were all interned, a lot of the property was
confiscated
or was sold off at pennies on the dollars, and
these people were never remunerated for it.
Very slightly. In about 1948 or 49, there were some slight repayments of some of the losses, but it was still just very minimal.
Looking back on that, can you explain to a contemporary audience the mindset of the U.S. authorities in those days that caused that mass exodus of the Japanese nationals, or Japanese American citizens to be interned in these desert camps?
Well, I think it was probably, a lot of it was panic, and then it was also festered by the Randolph Hearst newspapers.
They were always anti-Japanese, right?
They're anti-everybody, I think.
Yeah, but they did inveigh against the Yellow Peril for years.
Right,
years,
in fact, they? I guess, well, going way back, I guess yellow journalism wasn't due to the Orientals, but
no.
Some other character, but they carried it on, and to, you know, almost, they tried very hard, I guess, and they were successful in, you know, completing the panic that caused for the executive order of 1099 or whatever it was.
So. Yeah. So you were removed to the desert?
Yes. So we went.
Where'd you go?
We went to Manzanar, which was in Owens Valley, which is between Bishop and Lone Pine. The whole area that at one time had been a very lucrative and rich area. And the City of Los Angeles Water Department, which way back in those days was a privately owned affair, they actually raped the valley and took all the water.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll recall a movie called Chinatown.
Yes, I do.
That pretty well typifies
what happened in those days
yeah. And what could have happened.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And most likely did. But.
Well, obviously it was very uncomfortable for you out there. Not only were you torn up and displaced, the regiment was very Spartan, was it not? The food?
Yes. The food wasn't very good. It got better as they let the people grow their own vegetables, so things became more palatable.
Mm-hmm.
When we first arrived, there were just army barracks with, and some of them had no roofs on them when we first arrived. And so you'd sleep with a wet towel on your face, and you'd wake up in the morning with a built-in mud pack.
Oh, the dust.
Yes, so.
Yeah. Blowing all night long. Huh?
So then they finally got rough, and they finally tar papered most of the places. But and then as it went along, they finally got linoleum for the floors, so the dust wasn't coming up through the floors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then people were growing gardens, and people had lawns between their barracks, and it finally got to be pretty fancy.
It must have taxed all your all their ingenuity to grow something in that desert area.
Right, it did. Yeah. They and I guess the people just didn't figure at all that there was any way they could grow vegetables in the desert, but they proved them wrong.
Well,
in fact, they even had a I remember they even had a golf course in the desert.
Really? They built one?
Yeah,
it was a miniature golf course.
Well, no, it was a par three.
Par three, yeah. Okay.
It's a par three sand course with, you know, the greens were sand.
That's marvelous. Well, not to gloss over a period that must have been very, very. Perhaps you being younger, you didn't feel it as acutely as your parents did, but it must have been a terrible experience for you.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
Well, as kids, it was kind of an adventure. But I'm sure the older people are. Especially teenagers that have had their freedom and had cars and were going to movies and when you wanted to you could drive down the corner and have a chocolate milkshake. This wasn't possible in camp. So.
Yeah. How long were you there, you and your family?
Well, we were there from 1942 till 44.
Definitely.
And then we were fortunate. We were able to go to Colorado for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And our relatives, some that didn't go to camp went to Colorado and set up a small farm. So we joined them for about a year.
Uh-huh.
And actually my mother was asked to come and more or less nurse my grandfather who was quite ill.
Uh-huh.
And so she nursed him until he passed away, which was about almost 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then they opened up California. And so we went back to California. See, this was in early 1945.
45. So, had the anti-Japanese hysteria subsided a bit by then?
No, it was probably right at its peak.
Was it in 45?
Because when I went back to school, now a lot of the people that had immigrated to the factories and what have you were from Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas,
the redneck element.
The redneck element, and they really took to abusing anybody that was different, so.
Mm-hmm. Especially for Japanese.
Yeah, so
the war was still on, apparently.
Right, the war was still going on,
yeah.
So. I ended up being a little bit of a rebel. I ended up getting in many, many fights. And finally, I started winning more than I was losing.
Uh-huh.
But it was pretty tough.
I bet it was. But by this time, your feeling for cars has solidified, and you're really interested.
Right. In fact, I believe I was 15. I didn't have a driver's license, and I got a learner's permit, and we found an old Franklin that was had been parked in
air-cooled.
It was an air-cooled Franklin that the gas tank was full of dirt and the tires were gone. Mm. And man said if I'd move it out of his yard, I could have it. Mm. So he signed the papers over, and they got tires for it. The gas tank was completely rusted out, so we took the gas tank off and we used the vacuum tank. I put a gallon in the vacuum tank, and the thing was very economical. It'd get about 19 to 20 miles on that 1 gallon. And it did use a lot of oil.
It did, though.
So we're using drain oil. So we pour in a quart of drain oil and a gallon of gas, and it was good for 19 or 20 miles.
That's fantastic.
And so I got a paper out, and the top was all tattered and gone. Mm-hmm. It was basically fabric, so we just took all the top off, and we cut the back part of the roof off. So I had a little canvas affair where the front part of the roof tacked on, and the rear, so it was kind of a four-door Phaeton.
Oh,
we would put all the newspapers in the back, and I would drive, and I'd have two kids help me, and we'd deliver LA Times.
Incredible.
That was my first...
Your first real car.
First real car, and the wheels would squeak real bad, and so we talked to an old mechanic, and he says, well, just, come here, I'll show you what to do. So took the water hose and squirted the wheels. He says, well, let them soak a little bit. He says, then the squeak will go away. And he was right. They would swell up and they'd quit squeaking.
Oh, yeah.
So we'd have to water the wheels about every other day.
Was the Franklin pretty well built?
What's that?
Did you have an opportunity to explore the Franklin itself? Was it pretty well built?
It was pretty well built. It was a good car. It didn't seem to have, any major problems. Most of the mechanical pieces were still quite good.
Were they?
And then it finally did start suffering. I guess one rod went bad, and it started knocking pretty bad. So then it finally gave up the ghost, and it went to the junkyard. But,
do you remember that was the only product that Charles Lindbergh endorsed when he got back from his flight back in the late 20s?
No, because it was
the Franklin. They called it the Airman.
Okay.
Franklin Airman. Him and the air crew.
Okay, right. Yeah. I didn't know that. But
yes. Well, then what? Then what happened? How
then? Then we found. I found a Model A, and
did you?
It was a Model A Roadster that that had belonged to a young fellow, and it went off to the war, and he died in the South Pacific. And his mother sold me the car with the idea that I would clear her whole garage out and repaint the inside.
Uh-huh.
So took several loads to get everything out of the garage, and then I painted her garage and fixed the door and fixed a broken window, and she was pleased. And I ended up with basically almost two cars.
Really?
There were enough parts for three engines, and almost enough parts for two cars. Mm-hmm. There was a frame, but there was only one body. So it so that kind of became my first race car.
It also was a sort of a laboratory for you too, because you'd not had any formal instruction in auto mechanics, had you?
No, but it's everything was do it yourself.
Out there, yeah. The that whole era, was this about mid-40s or?
Yes, 50s? Well, this was the mid-40s. So.
And that whole era after the war, an explosion of. In Southern California, explosion of do-it-yourself car rebuilding, refurbishing, and recreating, was it not?
Right, yes, it was.
You were right there in the middle of it.
Right in the middle of it, and I worked on. So then from this car, it sprang into another car that actually was professionally raced.
Excuse me, what did you think of the Model A?
Model A was probably,
was it well done?
It was well done. It was. Uh-huh. Of course, this Model A it didn't have a Model A engine. It
had, long since gone.
It had a Model B engine, and it had...
Which was the Fort Banger. Huh?
Fort Banger, and it had a Kreger conversion cylinder head.
Really?
Uh-huh. And so actually I raced that car or that engine in another car.
Yeah. How do you spell Kreger?
Cragar.
Was that a popular conversion kit that was available?
Yes, it was.
What did it do to the engine? What kind of...
It increased the power probably from 80 or 65 or 70 horsepower to well over 100.
Wow. So the drag strips and the drag races were in...
That didn't start until, early 1949, 1950s. Mm-hmm. When
that was just beginning to come together, right. Wasn't it? The conversion craze and the drag strips and the drag racers.
Right, and the drag strip thing started basically from street racing, and then and there had been street racing before the war.
Was it an attempt to get it off the street and into a controlled atmosphere?
Right.
A conscious attempt by the authorities to.
I think there were
street racing.
Well, I think that was a premise they used,
yeah.
And basically the National Hot Rod Association was formed, I think, at about that time. But the first real sanctioned hot rod race or drag race was first legal one was conducted at a blimp base in Tustin, California.
Where's that?
Well, that's outside of Los Angeles.
How do you spell it?
Tustin.
Tustin.
It's right now it's a lighter than air. It was a lighter than air base. Now it's a helicopter base for the Marines.
Oh, was it really?
In fact, they just recently had a. They resurrected and had another drag race there.
Yeah.
Just a matter of a few months ago.
Sort of an anniversary or
more. Right. In fact, I ran at that first race and.
Did you?
Our car was a top eliminator, but we never got a trophy. The major sponsors were was a fellow named Stillwell. He was a motorcycle dealer, and it was billed as Hot Rods versus Motorcycles.
Uh-huh.
And the fastest motorcycle got beat. He got the trophy and they left.
Really?
And the car that beat him, we got nothing.
Oh, no. What do you mean? He swiped the trophy?
Well, no, he just didn't. He didn't give a trophy to cars. He figured the cars weren't going to win, so he didn't bring any trophies for cars.
Now, what were you driving?
Well, actually, I wasn't driving the car, but I owned half of the car.
Okay. Uh-huh. What was it?
It was a 25 Model T.
25 Model T?
Well, that was 25 Model T body.
Right. Uh-huh. What kind of engine did
it have? Had a Mercury flathead
V8. Oh, wow. That was your first race?
Yeah. Another fellow drove the car, but I owned the engine and and some other fellows. We had a partnership. We kind of owned the car together, but the engine was mine.
What type of you seem to be at this point, at least, the mechanical idea man. You were coming up with the mechanical ideas, and others were racing. Did you yourself begin to do any racing?
Yes, I did at a later date. In fact,
yeah.
I drove at the dry lakes, and I did drive at the drag races, and I did a little bit of circle track driving. But
which dry lakes were those?
This was the El Mirage dry lake.
Oh.
And then, of course, I ran at the Bonneville.
Did you? Uh-huh.
Speed trial, so.
What kind of vehicles did you have there?
Well, basically in those days I ran, you know, pretty much a different versions of 29 Model A's.
Oh, really? That was your passion at that time?
Right. Well, in I guess through most of my young age, you know, the Ford vehicles were the only vehicles that, you know, nobody else built cars in those days except Ford.
And the ones that would hold together and still be used.
Well, the Ford was the image car then.
Yeah, right.
And maybe today it's not, you know, maybe it's not the image car anymore, but it's back in those days, that was the only thing you raced was a Ford.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. In fact, there was a Model T Speedster Association at one time.
And in fact, I worked at a Ford dealership in Los Angeles.
Did you? Remember the name of it?
It was City Ford.
City Ford.
It's still in existence.
Is
and
it?
The same family is still
same
basically
family?
On it.
What family is that?
It's the Cook family.
And they still?
It's Cook Brothers, and they also own a company called Challenge Mixers. They're one of the larger West Coast manufacturers of cement mixers.
Oh.
And their Ford Cook Brothers truck business became quite successful. So. It's still in the Los Angeles area, still same location in the shadows of the old Lincoln Heights Jail.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever go out and say hello to them when you were
Well, I stopped in there, and one of the, well, the cooks have all pretty much all gone, and there's another family that was a, Mr. Fred Ware was the general manager, and one of his sons basically runs the Ford dealership part. And then there's one of the cooks that runs the Challenge Mixers. Most of, you know, the original people, they're all gone now, but the families are still there.
Well, what happened next then? You're into the drag racing
and then
scene?
The Korean War came on, and I was going to Pasadena City College. And in the meantime, I was drag racing and circle track racing and going to school. And
what were you studying at Pasadena?
Well, I was studying basically art and engineering.
Good, yeah.
So I joined, I'd been in the Naval Reserve for about 2 years. And we had I'd taken a leave of absence and gone to Indiana racing a, this roadster that I owned part of. And we
what
were...
What kind of roadster was it?
This was a... Well, this was a, 25 Model T roadster, track roadster, and when we when I came back, we were probably, I was 2 weeks longer than I was supposed to be. In fact, to get enough money to get home, I had to work in a Ford dealership for a week in their parts department, and this friend of mine, he worked as a mechanic. He was a very good automatic transmission mechanic, and in those days, that was, you know, they were really sought after.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. So he worked for a week, and we got enough money so we could bring our race car and come home. And so
Did
I got
you win?
Back. No, we ran fifth at this one big track, and well, it really wasn't enough money to get our pay our expenses home, so we had to work.
Your car back, yeah.
So when we got back home, the Naval Reserve had received my wire, but somebody had filed it wrongly, and they turned my name into the draft board, so I hustled, and the only thing I could do was, rather than go in the Army, I joined the Air National Guard. And the unit got called to duty, say, in early 1951. So I went in the Air Force, Air National Guard, went to Texas, and then I went to a mechanic school in Missouri. And then they, for some reason, they shipped me to Minneapolis, Minnesota as an aircraft engine mechanic, and I'd never looked at an aircraft before.
Where was so, the base there? Was that Will Chamberlain Field?
Right. In fact, I stayed right there.
Yeah. I'd been there a few years before.
So then they, and also Fort Snelling had been the big school where they had the Japanese language school.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Was there. Well, then they finally shipped me to Korea, and when I got to Korea, it was... now back again, I was a heavy equipment mechanic. And the people, there were several people in this Air National Guard unit that were Art Center students. So a couple of them I kind of kept in contact with, and they said, well, you know, since you do art and things like this, well, you ought to come to Art Center. Because I had been doing racing programs for one of the timing associations.
Okay.
There was a fellow, the fellow named Gus Manum. He did,
I suppose his name.
That's M-A-N-E-E-N, or something like that. But he did real nice, I could never understand how he did wheels so nice and round. And you know, his wheels always looked perfect. And at that point in time, I never knew they had such things as called ellipse guides that you could, you know, well, like circle templates, although at different degrees. And you know, I didn't even know those existed until I went to Art Center. And I was always trying to figure out. He did the drawings for the so-called the Premier Timing Association, which was called the Southern California Timing Association.
Now, what was that?
This was a Dry Lakes unit that ran at the Dry Lakes, and then they also sanctioned the Bonneville speed runs.
I see. And by timing, you meant they were the official timers?
Yeah, they would be the official timers. Well, the association I worked with was called Rosetta. And a fellow named Ray Ingram, that was his association. Well, they had a whole group, and they would run coupes and sedans and almost anything you could run. Uh-huh. Whereas the SCTA were pretty much based on more, you know, strict race cars. SCTA, Southern California Timing Association.
Right.
So this Gus Manum did their programs, and I did the Rosetta programs.
Oh.
So
that got you back into racing.
Well, yeah. Then plus I would, I think they paid me all the. I think I got paid either $30 or $40 for each cover.
Really?
Which was, you know, not very much money.
Cover? You mean?
For doing the drawings for the covers.
Oh, for the programs.
Right, for the
I
programs.
See. Okay.
Program covers.
You weren't involved in that time. You were doing.
Well, no, I was also racing, but
I
did their programs. So when I got out of the service after Korea, well, I went to Art Center.
Mm-hmm.